It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark, with me as 95% always with my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And Elliot Serrano's here.
I think I make up the other 5%.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about this. You come on semi-regularly, so I think it's semi-special.
Oh, like a semi-sweet chocolate.
There yeah, it's not like, oh, he's on again.
Yeah, it's good.
But you were like 98% at one point. What
yeah,
happened?
I get up there, and then like life gets really complicated.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm not on as
and
much.
And Chicago TARDIS, I ended up recording a bunch of panels. That knocked your average down.
Yeah, when he has three podcasts from the Chicago TARDIS, and I'm not on any of them.
We've run one. We haven't run the other two.
Yeah, there's two more in the bank.
Which we'll probably get to once we don't have a topic as big as this. But obviously,
it's the end of the year.
Obviously, one of the reasons Elliot is here is Elliot's the biggest Star Wars fan I know. And Rogue One has come out this weekend.
Yes.
So we've all seen it. As tradition, we have not mentioned it to each other. We spent about a half an hour talking about Dan Slott's clones conspiracy and Jack Kirby's 70s Captain America's, and we haven't mentioned this at all.
Yeah.
So, Elliot, what'd you think?
Well, it's funny.
It wasn't that funny.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was kind of funny.
Vader made a joke.
Funny. Yeah, there were.
There's going to be major spoilers in this podcast.
Oh, yeah,
is for folks who have seen the movie already.
Absolutely.
And as far as what I think, I'll get into it. But it's funny. It's ironic. No, not even ironic. It's typical. You go on social media and everyone's talking about how Rogue One is the greatest Star Wars movie ever now.
Yeah.
How it's even better than The Force Awakens.
Yeah, because they said that about Force Awakens last year. It's because it's new.
Yeah, it's the newest shit. That's how I feel about Marvel movies. I'm always like, the newest one's the best, and that's not true.
Right.
Right.
So then, but I will say I had mixed feelings. My first impression, I know, afterwards when the screening was over, this was probably the most depressing of all the Star Wars movies. In fact, it got me to the point where I'm like, guys, I need a Star Wars movie with an up ending because so far, 4 out of the 7 films have had down endings.
They're all downers. Yeah. This one particularly because everyone fucking died at the end.
Everyone dies.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone.
And
and
excruciatingly, too.
Yeah. 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 No one had a quick death.
I saw it with
that. And no one fell into a thing. Did you notice that?
True.
In every movie of Star Wars, if you die, 90% of the chance you're going to fall into a thing.
Someone almost fell into a thing, but then the thing like kind of had a bridge that he
And someone on. Almost oh, said, yeah. I have a bad feeling about this and got cut off.
Then got cut off.
There was a concerted effort. We can get into this in detail, but there was a concerted effort to break the traditions of Star Wars with this. And there was a clear message of, this is not one of the chapters.
Yeah.
So this is what Star Wars is if it's not furthering the Skywalker story.
Yeah, but then it kept doing everything to refer back to the Star Wars movies.
Right.
You know, like Dr. Ponda Baba shows up.
Well, who's this?
You know,
Walrus Man.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that real quick. I really liked that because those are the two guys in the bar and like Obi-Wan Kenobi cuts his arm off.
Yeah.
And
he was a graphic designer.
He was an architect.
He was trying to get out of, he was trying to like have a good time at the bar.
Yeah.
And his buddy would get drunk and get him into trouble.
That's right. That's a Robot Chicken's
Robot Chicken.
Right, so, but specifically,
and Conan's
that,
in that. Like Conan plays his boss.
Right.
That's a great.
Like, look, you don't have a hand.
That's a great skit, right? That's like an awesome skit. So, what's cool about this movie is that scene. The guy with the ugly face, who in that skit on Robot Chicken is like, we have the death sentence on 6 systems.
Yeah.
He's like lying because he's a drunk asshole. This movie confirms that happened.
Yeah.
Because they bump into the guy and he's like, whoa, what the fuck? Get out of here. Get out of my way. And his walrus buddy's like, come on, dude. Chill out. Let's go. That confirmed for me, my headcanon, that skit is exactly how it happened.
Although
Walrus
Man starts the fight with Luke because he grabs him.
I think he's enthusiastic.
In the bumps it's into like him, to go, hey, I like your suit. And he's lying.
It's like, I'm so sorry. I bumped into you.
So basically, that just means that Obi-Wan Kenobi is a huge asshole. He's just an enormous, or he's an old crazy person.
Maybe he's racist towards walrus men.
The specific
they're
species.
They're all alike.
They're every one of them.
Never trust a walrus man.
Yeah.
Never trust a walrus in an orange jacket.
Right. They're evil.
I don't trust a walrus in an orange jacket.
Well, maybe that's like their uniform. You know, like Greedo's people, they all have the same uniform. Right? Isn't that a thing?
I think that was a model of the era, because Greedo's dressed pretty close to Walrus Man, if you look at it.
Yeah, he's got like an orange jacket on.
It's a late
or...
70s Star Wars thing, which this film does a good job of replicating a 70s
Yeah,
Star
everyone had
Wars
mustaches.
Feeling.
Half the X-Wing pilots were rocking the sheriff.
Feathered hair.
Yeah, it looked awesome.
The tech, you looked at all the ships, they had the old switches and everything from Star Wars, the Death Star scenes.
The screen readouts were great, too, because they were all that like DOS... line work, but it didn't feel dated. It felt like, okay, I can see how this operating system runs the galaxy.
Well, I went to go see it with my buddy Marco, and he told me that we were talking about the movie afterwards, and Darth Vader in this movie had like red eyes, like
the lenses were red.
The lenses were red, and I guess he was telling me that the producers of the movie, the Darth Vader suit in this film was an exact replica down to the materials and the specifications for the one that was in A New Hope, which didn't have a huge budget. So it's why it kind of looked a little off.
Darth Vader does have red lenses, and the other thing is the tunic goes over
the
neck
the
plate,
chain,
which
wasn't
it doesn't
visible.
Do in any other movie, and I noticed in Rogue One it did.
Yeah, so they were trying to make this look as close to like A New Hope as it could.
Well, this movie, the thing that really impressed me, this movie ends the second before A New Hope.
Yeah.
Like it literally ends with the Star Destroyer chasing the Tantive IV.
Yeah, it's really cool. And that's kind of one of the things you wonder is like, where exactly does this movie take place? I think anyone who knows
10
about.
10 minutes before.
Right. But I think anyone who knows about Star Wars knew that this was the movie about how they got the plans to the Death Star. But all these people online were like, does it take place after Force Awakens? Is it episode 8? Like, people had no clue what to make of this. And I think that's... they did a good job of showing you exactly where this movie lands.
Yeah, they do a great job of grounding it. I like. I don't know if I found it depressing. It was definitely dark. And there was a moment where everyone was dying. And I saw it with my 9-year-old, and he turns to me and he goes, is everybody going to die in this movie? And I'm like, yeah, I think so.
Looks like.
Pretty sure.
Yeah.
And he was asking me later, he's like, well, so why do they make everybody die in this movie? And I thought, well, if they showed, they did such a huge job in this, and they moved the cause of the rebellion so far forward that had they lived, you would have had to explain why they're not helping Luke and Han Solo.
Right.
Because they would have been heroes. They would have been generals. They would have been telling Luke and Han what to do. They would have been on Endor with them.
Right.
So that's the way to explain it. It's kind of like Revenge of the Sith, which did it in a ham-handed way. But it was like, we're going to kill this guy, and we're going to wipe C-3PO's brain, and we're just going to... like, there was a sweeping house to try to set it up to get it there.
This movie as a prequel works much better than the actual prequels for Star Wars. Like, the original three prequels were such a hot mess with, like, you know, he goes from, like, a good guy to, like, slaughtering children in, like, 20 minutes. And it's like, they did not do a good job with those prequels. This movie, I think, did a great job of setting up A New Hope and still kind of being, like, its own standalone thing.
The thing is it only works because, you know, A New Hope does what it does. The movie, to me, the movie just doesn't stand on its own.
Don't think you could see this on its own.
But who would start Star Wars with this? I mean, I know kids have started with Force Awakens, but I feel like, there might be kids that saw Force Awakens and then this. But I figure in the year between, most kids have sat down with the Blu-rays.
Right, but you can see that they are intentionally making these movies so that they can be someone's first Star Wars movie.
Yeah,
you
know, Joe Quesada had that quote about Marvel Comics, is every Marvel comic we produce is somebody's first comic.
Right.
Right, so maybe that's kind of the same idea. This, no matter what, this is definitely the first Star Wars movies a lot of people have seen, right? I mean, there's just too many people and $70 billion or whatever they made.
$71 million this weekend. So right. It did great. So apparently...
it just clocked in at 155.
Really? Worldwide?
Yeah.
Okay, so Friday 71 opening domestic, was
which
the
also,
third highest
Which
this
also
year.
Tells me there's not that many alt-right people out there.
Well, but they're happy because, see, essentially, the alt-right knows this is... Rogue One is a story of a diverse cast of characters that get the Death Star plans. then turned him over to a bunch of white guys to save the galaxy.
Right.
Because at that point, it's everyone's white. You
and
know?
The rebellion, yeah. Well, that's what's cool about this. Like,
unless you're an Akbar.
Yeah.
By the way, he doesn't come until later, though.
No, no, there's like an older...
His species of people were in the...
There's an older, jollier... There's like a mating of Jabba the Hutt and Admiral Akbar guy in this.
Yeah. I think he's kind of the same species, but he has greener and... Yeah, like we have different colored people, so he has different colored like fish people.
Yeah, but I'm watching this, I'm going, wow, this is a cool character. Why don't we see him anymore? Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
And I kind of had the opposite feeling going in. Every time they introduced a new strong character, I'm like, well, okay, how are we getting rid of you?
Yeah, I guess it didn't occur to me because I just assumed everyone in this movie was going to be like grunt level people. Because mm-hmm. to me, this movie very much seemed like, you know, if it's not following Luke around, like a guy who changes the galaxy with his actions, this is just going to follow a smile. This is like what it's like to be like a guy in the rebellion, like a grunt work, you know? So it's like you kind of just see what the day-to-day rebellion stuff is like.
Right.
And I actually kind of liked it. I actually really did like this movie. I think if you ranked Star Wars movie and like Empire Strikes Back is like your the top of your list, and the bottom of your list is like
Phantom Menace.
Pick a prequel, you know.
I'd pick Phantom Menace.
Sure, this movie is probably closer to Empire than Phantom Menace.
Okay, tell me, outside of K2SO, who did you like?
Well, that's a very good point. I felt like
the robot is K2SO. Yes. He was great. Who was that?
That was Alan Tudyk, who is in Firefly.
I have a leaf on the wind.
The robot. Red-haired guy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And he's been in a million things. He and Nathan Fillion are doing a web series now called Con Man, which I haven't watched, but I want to. And it's about them doing sci-fi conventions.
Are those two that they keep saying they want them to play Blue Beetle and Booster Gold?
Yes.
Yeah. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, I could not feel
nobody.
For any
No, this movie was very plot-driven.
Yeah.
And you're right. That is one of my problems with it. I didn't feel a connection to it. It was all like... Where are these people going to go? And I did love how we broadened it out. I was confused in the beginning. I'm like, well, is Forrest Whitaker in the rebellion? Or is he like a bounty hunter?
I think Forrest Whitaker...
Because they were scared
was
of
was Osama bin Laden. Because he was like a radical extremist, right? That no one in the rebellion wanted to deal with anymore. And he had like a breathing problem. Remember Osama bin Laden used to have a tank he was hooked
up to? But he sounded like Darth Vader.
Well, see, that's the thing. I was confused by this movie. When it starts, they cut like five different times to introduce five different characters.
Kind of like Suicide Squad.
We're all going to meet. Kind of like that.
Except they in Suicide Squad, they introduce the same two characters three times.
Right. But then when they have that like pilot guy and Forrest Whitaker, he's like the pilot guy's got like a hood on and you don't know it's Forrest Whitaker. He sounds like he's doing like a funny voice. Like a helium type voice. Mm-hmm. I didn't recognize his voice at all. And then later when he speaks.
Idi Amin, remember? From
it's very strange.
Yes.
From a King of Scotland.
Yes.
Yeah. That was like, I was like, oh, he's doing Idi Amin again. What the hell, dude?
From the movie. Well, so here's who I liked. I liked the blind non-Jedi guy.
He was interesting. It was really cool to see someone devoted to the Force who was not a Jedi.
Yeah.
So if you want to open that can of worms, that's what happens when a guy doesn't have midichlorians.
Yeah, I think it makes sense, right? It's like everyone who believes in the Force wouldn't necessarily be Force sensitive.
Right.
So I think this guy can maybe access the Force very briefly or just kind of scratch at the
surface.
But not to the extent that a Jedi would.
He's
nowhere near, you know, this guy. That's why I didn't use a lightsaber, because I think a lightsaber, you have to have the Force to use it or you'll cut your arm off
right.
or something.
This is one of my favorite. I had an argument with Stu last year after Force Awakens. Not on the show. It was in the news shop where he comes up and he's like, so Finn's a Jedi, right? I was like, why are you saying Finn's a Jedi? Because he fights with a lightsaber.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
For 2 minutes and ends up in a coma.
Yeah, he gets beat up.
That's what happens when you have a lightsaber and you're not a Jedi.
But the marketing tried to push that Finn would be a Jedi. So you don't know if that's something that they were doing to like throw people off.
I think that's absolutely what they were doing. Because trailers, you don't see Rey use a lightsaber. Mm. Maybe in the later ones, but in the early trailers before the movie come out, even on the poster, isn't Finn holding the saber?
Well, they had that campaign where everyone had the lightsaber like in front of their face.
Oh, that's
I think
right.
to the point of like Han Solo had one.
And had a gun.
Carrie Fisher had a gun.
Did the blasters and stuff.
But
I did like it. Like I said, if I had to rank it, I liked it more than Force Awakens. I think Force Awakens is a good movie, but it's the same movie as A New Hope. It's like the same thing. So this, I think, because it's original, and I think there's definitely a lot of like plots this definitely got messed up in the editing room because, like, remember they were talking about those crystals and they're like, the crystals that power the Death Star.
The Kyber crystals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
they just go to that planet.
Well, I know, but the blind guy and the guy with the big gun had, like, a whole subplot that felt like it got cut out because the blind guy or the other guy with the gun had a big backpack. And in that huge backpack, he put a huge crystal. And then it, like, never got referenced again what the crystal was for. Like, I don't know if that was supposed to be his gun.
They're like dilithium crystals in Star Trek. I think they power guns as well as lightsabers.
Sure, but I'm saying it just seemed like there was a whole plot with all those characters cut out of it. Yeah. Like, you know, they're here.
And I think you're making a good point by saying the blind guy and the guy with the gun. I think you're underscoring Elliot's point. Before we did the podcast, I was like, you know what? I don't really remember anyone's name because I saw the movie once and, you know, it's not like I bought the figure. Years, so I might need everyone else on this podcast to help me, you know, let me know who the names are. But you're right, because I didn't connect to them, they're not sticking in my brain. I can say, you know, the black giant android and Felicity Jones and
Jyn Erso, which they made all this talk about. I mean, I thought it was great that the lead on a Star Wars film was a female. And the only female, it seemed.
Again.
Like, yeah, again. But
second year in a row.
Right, but it's like, what about her made her any different? I mean, you could have cast anybody in that role.
Yeah. We saw the movie, we had got out, and I was talking to like Dave and Stu and Marco afterwards, and I was like, that could have been like Jennifer Lawrence. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, how many... I don't know. Maybe she was not British. I don't know, but it just
she is
like,
British. Yeah,
yeah. It's like how many British brunettes with like a funny accent do we really need?
She did a Doctor Who. I'm trying to remember which one, but I saw it again recently.
Yeah,
she was supposed to be the Black Cat in the third Andrew Garfield movie, but it didn't go forward. So she has a very small part in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, yeah. I vaguely remember her there, and she's not a bad actress, it's like I just didn't care at all.
Well, I saw this great meme the other week that said, look at the diversity in Star Wars. We've got every kind of brunette girl you can imagine.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like this is the same girl as what's her name, except their backstories are even similar. They're both abandoned, like abandoned on a planet by their father. And
yeah, there was a moment where I was like, I'd like to see them team up and then see which one is hotter. Oh, wait, they're 50 years apart.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Well, there was a rumor for the longest time. Everyone think, oh, she's going to end up being Rey's mother. I'm like, no, that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
I still think Rey is Han Solo and
Leia's kid.
I still think they're going back to the twins of the books.
Then how does... well, we'll see.
Time will tell. I do like these ideas, though. Like Star Wars, even if they don't... They're going to do, what, two more? So there'll be like
two more episodes.
Up to episode 9 will be done, and I'm sure they'll do more.
But we're also getting more side films. We're getting a young Han Solo movie.
Yeah.
Which will be easier to explain now that people have seen Rogue One.
Right. I would just rather, you know, make your episode 9. Go up to 9 at least, so we have like the, you know, three different trilogies. Right. But just keep making these in between Star Wars movies.
I think it's like Marvel where, you know, we know we're coming to the end of phase 3 in a couple of years, but that doesn't mean it's the end of the Marvel universe.
No, no way.
End of Star Wars is when they stop making money.
Well, right. And yeah, when is that going to happen? Like when the world ends, you know what I mean?
Right.
Seriously. When is Star Wars not going to make money?
I would say they've already proved that Harry Potter films can keep making money.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
You know, when they start making their spinoffs.
Right.
And that's what Fantastic Beasts is basically Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's what I guess we're at, where it's like, you know, this didn't have like the scrolling in the beginning of the movie.
Which I liked. Yeah, and I think that was a clear indication to go, this isn't one of the main ones. This is over here. I felt like I was reading, and the only analogy I can come up with, you're gonna yell at me for, but it was like reading an issue of X-Force, because it was it's like, okay, it's not the X-Men, it's all these different characters that live in this world, and they're doing things that affect the X-Men, but I don't really have to read X-Force if I'm reading X-Men.
But and here's the thing, in the New Hope, the lady who they grabbed out of, I assume, the time stream to play the younger version of like the female general that's not Princess Leia.
Oh no, she's a CG.
Well, that was a computer generated character.
That's the thing I want to talk about.
Carrie
Fisher.
Mon Mothma?
Is that the other female in the universe? There's only other one girl in the
universe. Yeah, Mon Mothma, yeah.
The leader in Return of the Jedi. And I thought she was a new actress, and then there was one scene where she looked very CG, and I was like, okay.
I think that's a new actress.
Is it?
They picked the new actress. There was one
shot of her that looked a lot like the shots of Peter Cushing.
So the question is, that lady in A New Hope, when they talk about the Death Star plan, she's like, many Bothans died to bring us this information. Did we see Bothans?
No, that's in Return of the Jedi, because that's the Bothans finding the second Death Star. We still don't know what Bothans look like, and I kind of want a side movie about Bothans.
You know what?
Because I don't know if they're aliens
or
if they're just a people from Botha.
Bothans were in a Star Wars Battlefront video game. You could play a Bothan spy.
What do they look like?
They're, I don't know, like frog people.
Oh, okay.
They're humanoid, but they have like frogs.
Frog people make good spies?
Because maybe there's a lot of them.
We're not going to pay attention to the frog guy. Like listening to our private.
Yeah.
Like you have an imperial meeting going on. It's like, and don't forget, don't let these top secret plans get out in any way.
Ribbit.
Did you hear? No, I didn't hear it.
Oh, but so this movie did a good job of like, remember we were like, who builds like a hole that if you shoot a laser in it, the whole thing blows up. This explained that plot hole from the original Star
Wars.
Yeah,
I like that.
Which brings me to really the only likable character in the whole movie.
Mads Mikkelsen?
Yep.
Was this?
Galen Erso.
The father of
father, Galen. Yeah. And I'm there. That one bit where he explains why he built the flaw and what it was and does it like bing, bing, bing in a way that it almost sounded like Star Trek gobbledygook.
Yes.
You know, when they start explaining all the day.
Yeah, technobabble.
Technobabble.
Yeah.
But then, and I'm there going, now that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And here you go. Mm-hmm. This is brilliant the way they explain this. And his character was the only one I felt any sort of anything for.
There was a good how it should have ended. Just put out a new Star Wars version, and then they did one for Return of the Jedi recently, where they had like them showing the blueprints to the Emperor, and he goes, "So we got this new Death Star is going to be even bigger." He goes, "Well, as long as it doesn't have that access port where you can throw a torpedo down there and blow up the whole thing." No, it doesn't have that at all. Well, we've got is one big enough to fly the Millennium Falcon through.
Right. So I did like it. And that guy was great. I just kept
Which redeemed him for Doctor Strange, because he didn't do anything in Doctor Strange.
Yeah, but I think that's why I thought he was going to be a bad guy, because he's a bad guy in that, and he's a bad guy in James Bond, because he's got that, like...
Yeah, he's in Casino Royale.
Scumbag book of villain
he's
actors
a creepy
face.
Eastern European guy. Yeah. Wasn't he Hannibal?
He was actually...
Yeah, he was, right?
Probably, and I was a huge fan of the Anthony Hopkins Hannibal films, but he... is almost a better Hannibal.
Really?
Yeah, but
that is high praise.
It is, but Anthony Hopkins is
iconic.
Well, he's hitting that Al Pacino phase in his career where he just kind of sleepwalks through big monologues. Like both Thor and Westworld, I was like, okay.
Oh, really? I would disagree. Yeah. I'm on like episode 8 of Westworld, which I am loving the shit out of this show.
I think Westworld was great, but it is a Battlestar Galactica that has the budget to go outside, but it is good.
Yeah.
But he mostly just shows up and gives his monologues.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll listen to him all day.
And now he's narrating the new Transformers trailer, which is what everyone's into.
The new Transformers trailer is the Transformers movies on the whole are stupid because Transformers are stupid, and I'll fight anyone who says differently.
I watched the first one, said this is stupid, and never came back.
But the trailer for the new one looks awesome.
It looked like Transformers.
It does look like another Transformers movie, but it looks
cool. All the trailers look good, but the movies are
garbage. Well, we didn't see this together. Did you guys have more trailers than you've ever seen in your entire life before? Well, I feel like I sat through 9 trailers.
I think we had about 20 minutes of trailers during the movie
crazy.
I saw. But I figured we were going to get it because this is the last big movie before 2017, so all the big 2017 movies we're going to have a trailer.
There were a lot of summer
this.
Movies. And I expected all the Disney movies. Like, I expected to see Spider-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy and Pirates of the Caribbean. But I had a lot from other studios.
Anything good?
There were, like, Paramount stuff.
I didn't see a Wonder Woman trailer, which I really thought
I didn't
see
a Wonder Woman trailer. No, I mean, Pirates of the Caribbean looks kind
of
promising. And
Orlando
Bloom and Keira Knightley are coming back.
Ugh,
so I don't know. Johnny Depp has passed his sell-by rate, so who knows? They don't even put him in the trailer.
I think they're like going to hold on to it because they're going to change what he looks like, and they're going to try to be all goofy and dramatic.
They're trying to recast
him. That's what's crazy about those movies. This is how much money Disney has. They can make a shit franchise based off one good movie, do you know? And there's like 5 of those movies, right?
Well, I mean, you could say that about a lot of franchises.
I don't know.
I think the reason we get so angry at Transformers is you can't find a good movie in there.
Well, there isn't, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't know. And same thing with like Star Wars. Star Wars movies, there's not a lot of great Star Wars movies. They don't have a good average. Empire's good. New Hope has is good. Return of the Jedi has good stuff in it. The prequels have cool laser sword or lightsaber fights, but like beyond that, and Force Awakens and this one, what? There's no good Star Wars movies.
Yeah, Star Wars has the batting average of X-Men.
Yeah, they're not good.
Yeah,
and
just because the last one was good is no guarantee that the next one's gonna be good.
Well, but you guys liked the Force Awakens.
I like the Force Awakens. I even like it more now after Rogue One.
Well, so but how do you feel about this? Like, if you ranked them, like, is this in the higher echelon of like the originals?
See, Force Awakens for me, Force Awakens for me had a specific job to do, and it accomplished that job.
And that
which was to put the franchise back on track after the prequels.
And that's a huge task.
And that's why I was fine with them aping a lot of Star Wars because they were going out of their way to remind you, like, hey, remember, well,
they had to get the feeling right.
And this goes back to South Park. Did you guys watch the last season of South Park? There's a subplot where everyone's addicted to these things called member berries.
Sure.
Where and they're little blueberries that talk, and all they do is talk about Star Wars. And they just go, "Member Chewbacca, ooh, I'm member. Member the Force, ooh, I'm member." And people like eat the member berries, and they go, "Oh, Star Wars was good." And they're explaining that's why people think J.J. Abrams is a good filmmaker.
Yeah,
because he did the same thing with Star Trek.
Yeah,
he's like, "Ooh, remember Spock? I'm member." But I felt like that's all Force Awakens had to do was get us back to that tone where the original trilogy was.
Yeah.
And that's why he hired J.J. Abrams, because he did it with Star Trek. He couldn't sustain it, which is why I'm glad he's not doing the second Star Wars.
Who is doing the second Star Wars?
Ryan Johnson's doing the next one.
And he directed...
Looper. He did. Oh, okay. He also did a lot of Breaking Bad. He did some of the best episodes of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
All right.
So and they're saying that this one's going to be really good. And I have a feeling that Episode 8 is going to even more so address a lot of the things where it's like, it's going to be more its own movie. Now that Force Awakens has kind of reestablished things.
Yeah.
This one's going to have its own tone. So. It's going to be different.
Because like, Force Awakens wasn't bad, but it was very much like, it did exactly what it needed to do. It brought Star Wars back, and it was good. And that was a tall order, I think. So I wasn't expecting to be like this blown off the hinges, you know, make it the best Star Wars movie
ever. So does that put more pressure on Rogue One? Because Star Wars is back and it's good. Now we expect the next film to be really, really good.
I think it's tricky because it's not an episode. It's just like
no, but
weird.
It is the next Star Wars film.
No, it is, but it's a very in-between movie.
I'm going to throw out a really controversial thing here, and I don't want to, some people are going to think I'm crazy, but I think Rogue One was the most Disney of the Star Wars films yet.
In what way?
I mean, one...
It has a princess?
It has a princess. It was essentially a technological recreation of everything they could do. You know, bringing back characters from the dead on the CGI. Again, that last bit, while it was cool, felt like a Star Tours ride.
I
kept waiting for the Star Speeder to fly through at one point and have Gold Leader go... Star Tours, you're in a battle zone, you know? And it was doing the whole bit where it was bringing back characters using the technology that everyone knows. Disney
like animatronics.
And it, you know, the Tarkin thing was cool that they had him in there, you know.
The voice was fantastic. I don't know who did the voice, but it was dead on.
It wasn't Steven Stanton who does Tarkin on Rebels, because Steven Stanton does a great Tarkin on Rebels.
See, I'm not caught up to Rebels. People say Rebels is great, but number one, it's not streaming anywhere. And number two, every time I turn it on, it looks like Clone Wars, and I burned out so hard on Clone Wars that I couldn't come back.
They need to update that look. But you can tell that, I mean, Clone Wars is what, I mean, is what I kind of expected from Rogue One, but a little more sophisticated. Okay. And then people are going to think I'm crazy. You know, I think it's most Disney-fied, even though it was, I call it Star Wars for the Call of Duty generation, because... Because
it's a war movie?
Yeah, war first-person shooter.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that brings me to my biggest problem with the film, is I felt like the third act, the first two acts were about espionage, and it was like the fight in the city would look like Fallujah, and I was like, this is getting really topical, which I think is one of the reasons the alt-right got all crazy. But I felt like that third act was a video game.
Yeah.
Like it brought up all these complications that were not part of the story before. They were like, oh, by the way, there's a shield, and to take down the shield, we've got to do this over here, and then you got to go through this over here, and then you got to go through this here, and push this button, and then run over here. And I'm like, none of this was part of the story. It was all a way to slow down that third act. And then when the space battle happened, I was like, I wasn't expecting a space battle. I was expecting us to follow this small group of rebels, and now the entire fleet's attacking.
And I think a lot of that is like there's boxes they have to check off for Star Wars movies, and a space battle is one of them. They have to have a space battle. Every Star Wars movie has a space battle. So I think that's them being like, okay, well, here's a fight we can have in space.
Empire has a chase, but no battle.
Yeah, but they do go to, like, space and do stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're chasing the Millennium Falcon, but there's not a big battle of, like, two fleets shooting each other.
Yeah, but I think they have to do, if it isn't a space battle, like, go in space and do shit with spaceships, you know? And, you know, they had cool stuff where, like, the Hammerhead ship ran the Star Destroyer.
That was kind of awesome.
It was awesome. He rammed it in the Star Destroyer, they crashed, and then those two things crashed and broke the portal. You know, it's like, if they're not blowing up a giant thing in space, it's kind of like, you know, what are they doing up there? And to that point, it's like, that's, I think the problem they painted themselves in with this movie is like, we know they're not going to destroy the Death Star, and we know the Death Star isn't ever going to destroy a planet because it did that.
Because Alderaan is the big deal.
And that's like the test of the weapon is Alderaan. So it's like,
so they kept saying, just a city.
Yeah, just
they did that twice.
Just shoot a laser or, you know, 10% or whatever, which is cool, but it's like, you know, you kind of, you're in a rough spot, I think, as a filmmaker, if it's like you can't blow up the Death Star and you can't have the Death Star at 100% capacity, or else what the fuck are they going to do in A New Hope? And that thing, when they like recreate all these characters, they make them so younger. It's just like, why cast young Indiana or Han Solo at this point? Why not just use that technology and be like, here, Harrison Ford, play Han Solo and we'll just de-age you? Like, what, you know?
Yeah, you know what, those...
And they don't look real.
No.
Tarkin did. He looked good. And so did Leia at the end. But they didn't look real. They looked like computer-generated people. Like, we were watching Polar Express. It felt like Polar Express, where they look very realistic, but it's like...
It's the Uncanny Valley.
The second you put Tarkin next to a human,
yeah, you
it's
fall,
clear
you
that
fall
he's not
right
a real
right in
person.
The Uncanny Valley. And I felt like, script-wise, it really helped. Like, I was thinking, from a story perspective, I'm like, oh, I love that Tarkin's having, like, a political struggle with the main
guy
here. And I feel like, okay, that strengthens because it's not about Tarkin, and that explains why this guy's not the guy on the Death Star.
Yeah.
But...
And there has to be...
But then the execution is just like, it's gonna... It reminded me of Voldemort in the early Harry Potters.
Yeah. That to me didn't make sense, though. Why even have the Krennic character? Why not then just make it about Tarkin? And
because you can't have Tarkin walk around for 2 hours. It's, you know, a couple of shots. No. They showed the back of his head a lot.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like if the technology, it's like when they first were doing like 3D computer graphics, like when Beast Wars came out. They were like, we can do it, let's do it. And it's like, well, just because you can doesn't mean you should. It doesn't look good. And that's the issue I have with this, where they have the technology to make these guys look younger, recreate dead actors, but it's not quite there yet. The technology,
I don't think it ever will be there.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I mean, technology is
I don't know.
Like,
I think there's just too many subconscious things we notice about people.
Yeah.
Then that's what the Uncanny Valley is all about, is just like there's an instinct in you that's telling you that it's almost like a predator, like something's trying to trick you.
Yeah.
And like there's just something subconscious where you just pull back from it when it's that close. When it's cartoony, it's a representation of a person.
Right.
And then you kind of make that leap into abstraction.
But he looks
cartoony. Once it becomes...
You know, yeah. It's like his jawline was too defined.
It looked exactly like him. It was just the way he moved felt computery.
Yeah.
And what was it with all these scenes in the trailers that never showed in a movie?
That's, I think, editing. You know,
they're
I think
with the Jared Leto Joker suit footage.
I think this,
it's like all
somewhere
this
there's a movie that's Rogue One with the Joker in it.
But how much of this movie did they say they were doing reshoots in the summertime? They
did a lot of
cutting
reshoots,
it.
Yeah.
I think there's two or like when Dave was saying that there's like two movies here. It's like it really did feel like two movies, and he was trying to decide which one worked. Because there's the first half of the movie and the second half, and it just seems like so much of that movie. Like, why was Forrest Whitaker in this movie? Do you know? It's like they could have cut that dude out completely, and it still would have been the same movie. It's like, oh, he found her in a hole in the ground.
I think he could have ended that movie after Galen dies. Because Galen dies, gives them the information, they go to the Rebels, the movie's over. And when that scene ended, it sort of felt like the end to me, and I had a moment to go, well, I don't think I've been here for 2 hours. And this movie, the plot kind of moved around where I didn't know what act I was in. And the last time I had that feeling, a much, much worse film, was in Wolverine Origins.
That movie.
Was when was when Wolverine gets his adamantium and then fights Sabretooth. And then it'd been like, I was like, it's only an hour. The movie's over. And then they spend the second hour just throwing mutants all over the place.
Right.
It was a little bit of that. It was almost like they finished the movie with the father giving Gilo the plans. And then it's like, all right, now there's a video game attached that has AT-ATs and a space battle.
Yeah.
And all the rebels are whiny bitches.
Well, and see, that's the thing. We argued about
this. Well, that's
the
Star Wars universe at this point. Yeah. Luke is a whiny bitch.
No, no, but I'm saying, like, so this movie to me was the origin of the Rebel Alliance, right? This is what it's called, the Rebel Alliance. That just means it's a bunch of dudes all over the universe who are sick of the Empire. So this is the movie, I think, that coalesces the Alliance into, like, the fighting force we see in, like, A New Hope, where it's like, okay, you know, instead of just a bunch of ragtag guys... You know, this is starting to look more and more like an actual militia where they can assault the Death Star and they actually can blow it up versus, you know, just terrorist acts, right? Because the rebels are terrorists, essentially. Yeah. Like, that's essentially what they are.
That whole bit when they ambush the stormtrooper convoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're saying it felt like Fallujah and all that. Yeah, that was a totally, you know.
But then you had the other side of it where it was this council. That was like, oh, we can't do this because that means we're at war with the Empire and we can't win a war. So they were kind of trying to have it both ways. And it seemed to me that it was a lot of factions. Right. There were just a lot of different groups that hated the Empire.
And that's what I'm saying.
And that's when they decided to become a real alliance that had a mission and a goal to take down the Empire. But
that's what they do in Rebels, actually, because the television show Rebels is when the rebellion is still a bunch of factions.
Right, it's not organized.
Right, it's not organized yet, so I'm guessing you're right. It's Rogue One is when they all come together. I think the thing that maybe a lot of folks don't get yet is that this is, if I'm understanding this correctly, Rogue One is probably one of the first Star Wars movies that was a Lucasfilm story group construct. You know, those guys that have been put together by Disney and Lucasfilm to pretty much map out all the Star Wars movies.
So the way Marvel, Marvel was run when like Bendis and Millar and Quesada were in the room.
They'd sit down, come up with stories.
Yeah, which they don't do anymore. They dissolved that brain trust because... They're 13 movies in, and Kevin Feige knows what he's doing.
Right? Yeah.
But if you watch, if you follow a lot of these guys are on Twitter. Pablo Hidalgo is like the head of the Star Wars Story Group, and he always does some interviews on the Star Wars show on StarWars.com. And it's always, you know, he's always talking about what the influences are for the different films and so on. And you can tell that they're the ones that are going, this is what's going to happen. And then he was the one who commented on Twitter, this is the first time I've seen the way the whole movie's been put together all together. I'm pretty happy with it. So it's kind of like the whole, oh, so you were part of figuring out the story. Because the Saw Gerrera character is from Clone Wars.
Yeah.
The Forrest Whitaker character.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Oh, really? He's the first character to make the jump from that show to a film.
Right.
To where we, now it's kind of like confirmed that show's canon. Which, you know, it's produced by Disney. So it's if it's produced by Disney, it's canon.
Clone Wars wasn't. Rebels is, but Clone Wars was not. It was a Lucasfilm, though.
So it's kind of in the same umbrella or whatever.
And that's the kind of thing. I actually appreciated Jimmy Smith showing up in here because I was like, all right, that's a way we can tie into the prequels in a non-hokey way.
Right.
Is that... And you know what? Jimmy Smits is older now. Here he's older.
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of... Stu was complaining. He did not like it. And he was
saying... The movie or Jimmy Smits?
The movie, but he likes Jimmy Smits. And he was saying
Jimmy Smits is a Brooklyn College graduate.
Like, they were spoon-feeding you, like, Star Wars things. Like, oh, we're going to have an AT-AT in it, and then we're going to have Jimmy Smits in it, and he's going to mention Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then we're going to see this. And I don't know. I disagree.
I felt like that was organic.
Yeah, because
it didn't feel
he's a major key figure in the Rebel Alliance. Alderaan's like a huge part of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so and he is Leia's. He is Leia's father, so you get the idea that he went back to Alderaan, sent his daughter out, and he dies on Alderaan.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Why not? But why no title card for Mustafar? Of all the planets,
so that's where that was, right?
That was Mustafar.
And see, that was another thing we were talking about this too. We went to Mustafar and we saw this like giant castle, and it's like, Who the fuck built this? And Darth Vader's just like, yeah, let's build my house in a lava lake on the planet where I lost my fucking legs and got turned into a bacon person.
And killed my wife.
And killed his wife. Like, what kind of a fucking...
Vader's filled with self-loathing.
That's dumb. He shouldn't have been on, like, a little building. You know what I mean? Like, what does he do there? He just hangs out in that fish tank?
The rent. The rent was great. The overhead was awesome. Yeah, right? I mean, come on. You know how much rent in the Republic is these days?
If he was at a base, I just figured Darth Vader lived on a Star Destroyer. He's always off doing stuff, so why would he have a house?
I actually had to step out when that establishing shot came in, and when I came, because I had a kid who needs to go to the bathroom. And then when I came back in, it was just that door opening, and I'm like, oh, this is part of Vader's Star Destroyer. This is part of the Death Star. And then I saw the outside in it, and it didn't even occur to me that it was Mustafar. And that scene I thought was completely tacked on, and I was like, really? That's all the Vader we're going to get? This is literally just so we can sell new Vader product. But I thought they redeemed it at the end. When they basically extend the fight from the beginning of A New Hope. I liked that a lot. Well, that felt very seamless, and it really ramped up the action that he lightsabers seven guys in the face before the Tana IV takes off. I liked that.
People enjoyed it. It was awesome, but I'm going to tell you, it would have been even more awesome if Vader had shown up on the beach with the Death Troopers. And the reason those rebels can't make it off that planet is because Vader is cutting them down.
Yeah, I would have. That's the one complaint I had about this movie is we haven't really ever seen a lot of badass Darth Vader stuff. This movie's the first one to take a poke at him being this Jason in space, where as soon as the rebels,
and there was a Jason in space. Jason 10.
But I'm saying
actually, I like that. I've never thought of it that way.
It was great moment when they're in the dark and they're looking, and you hear his breathing, but you can't see him. And then he turns on the saber,
and he's just in front of them.
It was horrifying.
It was great.
Yeah. And the look on the rebels' faces, it just shows they know who Darth Vader is, and they knew they were all fucked.
Yeah, it's like the Punisher showing up.
You're just like, well, we're all going to die. But what would have been better, I thought, is this movie, if you're going to do Vader's a badass, go fucking hammy with it. He should have been chasing the rebels the whole movie. It would have been a much better movie if he was chasing this little girl from planet to planet to planet, fucking just cutting down hundreds and hundreds of
rebels. And it's not a budget thing, because all you really have to do is put a stuntman in that suit, and you hire James Earl Jones for another hour in the studio, who definitely sounded like an older James Earl Jones. Mm-hmm. It's funny, for some reason, the original films never take me out of the movie, and then James Earl Jones became a much bigger star after the trilogy.
Yeah.
Not because of the trilogy, but other things he had done. And this movie was the first time where he showed up. I'm like, ah, it's James Earl Jones. Because I think he had that older voice that was 30 years older.
They were modulating him a little too much.
It took me out a little bit. It sounded
Did you guys like when he had a joke? When Darth
Vader made a joke? I was like, really?
Please explain the joke to me. Mike Lawrence posted about this today, and I don't remember it, or was that the moment I was out of
the bad guy with the cape.
Yeah.
Krennic.
Who is Roland Daggett in Dark Knight Rises, and I could not
get
past it. Every time I saw his face, I was like, your plan didn't work, my friend.
Yeah.
That's all I heard.
Dude, I didn't know that was him, but thanks for that. So he says something so I'm in charge, right? And then without turning around, Vader force chokes him, and then he drops, and then Vader turns around, he's got his little pincers out, and he's like, don't choke on your ambition.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was choking.
Yes.
I thought it was
I just liked that he choked him without turning around. I thought that was
cool.
That was kind of cool.
And then Stu hated that. He was like, Darth Vader doesn't make jokes. And I was like, well, it's fine. It wasn't that goofy. He said it would have been much better if he had just choked him and didn't turn around at all and then just kept walking. And I'm like, yeah, but then it would have been what happened? People are stupid. They would have been like, why did he get choked? And it's like, because fucking that's Darth Vader's second
that's
move.
His thing,
it's cut you with a lightsaber and choke you. Those are the two things he does.
That's another great Robot Chicken sketch. Do you remember that sketch where they say where they have a meeting with all the Imperials? He goes like, look, Darth Vader thinks he can choke you from across the room. He can't.
Yeah.
So what you do is you fall on the floor and then you put a mustache on, and the next time you see him, he thinks you're someone else.
The other one I liked is there's a meme of it, and it's Darth Vader. He's choking a stormtrooper, and the stormtrooper's like, harder. And, then, and Vader's like, what? Yeah. It's a great gag.
What?
The Vader stuff, it's just that's the thing with these movies. It's all movies do this. They play this stupid fucking game where they're always like, all right, we're going to use the Joker, we're going to use Darth Vader, but don't use them too big, because in the next movie, we're going to do huge with the Joker or Vader. And it's You can't think like you're going to be able to make another one. This is all you'll make.
We've already had the huge Vaders. We've had three of them 30 years
ago. But that's what I'm saying. It's like in the original three trilogies, none of those lightsaber fights are especially awesome. And then in the prequels, they finally have the effects to do awesome lightsaber fights.
And they brought martial arts guys and really did the choreography.
Right, but in none of those movies is he as Vader in a lightsaber fight. So this is the first movie with him as Vader in a lightsaber fight with the effects to do justice to a lightsaber fight. And they were like, yeah, sure, for 30 seconds, he's just going to mow down a bunch of rebels. And it's like...
But you know what? I can't see Vader doing flips and stuff. I remember when...
No, he doesn't have to do flips, but they should have had him chasing that girl from planet to planet to planet. Because what is scarier than Darth Vader? He's like your big bad guy.
And you know what that's all about? Have you read the Kieran Gillen's Darth Vader comic?
Yes.
Which, you know what, I was not a big fan of Kieran Gillen because he wrote maybe one of the worst Iron Man runs I've ever read in my life. And then I read Darth Vader just because I was reading the Jason Aaron Star Wars and I knew Vader Down was coming. And that's what that's all about, is him like trying...
Trekking Luke.
Well, yeah. And he's also trying to stay alive because the Emperor wants to kill him for losing the Death Star. And he's like tracking Luke and covering his tracks.
Right.
And he's just going around the universe.
But that's what I'm saying,
people.
Like that Vader Down story... That's a great.
That was a really good
story. Yeah. Where
I haven't gotten to that. You never ordered the trade, so I'm like looking at it on Amazon.
I sold it.
Pull it.
That's the best line of the whole thing.
What's that?
Yeah, when the rebels surround him, he goes, "I'm surrounded by dead men."
Yeah,
and they're going.
It was really cool.
That's like a Clint Eastwood line.
Yeah.
What was really cool about it is it just showed how dangerous just one guy is. And that entire story was like the rebels managed to find him. They know where he's at. They know he's alone, and they were like, send everything. They sent tanks, ships, all kinds of shit, and they couldn't contain him.
Han Solo gets a hold of a walker and tries to step on Vader
In the first, story.
And it doesn't...
Cassidy.
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't happen. I'm like,
Yeah, see, that's the kind of shit when... And maybe that's the problem, is those comics are in continuity. I just watched an interview with John Cassidy at, like, a French... Comic-Con, and he was talking about Star Wars probably like a year ago or something, and he was saying when he does any project for Marvel, when he did Captain America, when he did X-Men, they tell him, just do your version of the characters, and they get him free reign. So like Captain America's in chainmail, Beast looks like a cat, you know, and they just let him go. When he was doing Star Wars, he said he had like, and Marvel had like two different guys to talk to about X-Men and two different guys to talk to about Captain America, never had to redraw anything and was totally kind of left to his own devices. In Star Wars, he said he had like 16 or 18 people at both companies, and he was constantly redrawing things because some guy like Lucas would be like, well, this ship doesn't look like this, or this guy wouldn't be on this planet at this time because he's on this planet. Whatever, all these like behind the scenes guys. So he had to redraw a lot. But the stuff they were doing with like Vader in those books was so good. It's kind of like when the movies don't do it.
Yeah.
It's just like,
well, I felt like
fuck?
This movie started to get to what the comics were doing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because Lucasfilm apparently has always been like that. Because, you know, John Byrne did the first two issues of Indiana Jones.
And he quit because
he was
supposed
to do a long run. And he got so sick of the Lucasfilm people, he quit after the second issue.
And I understand.
And that was back in the 80s when they weren't really too concerned with maintaining.
Yeah, I mean, think about
it. One person.
Look at the first.
Yeah, and it was one movie when he drew that book.
Yep. And then the same thing with the first Star Wars comic from Marvel. None of those things look accurate. Vader's helmet looks
off.
Those
comics are ridiculous.
Yeah, everything's like way off, and it makes sense. You know, they didn't have DVDs and fucking the internet for all this reference material.
And they didn't know where else they were going to go. So I find those omnibuses really interesting because I finally read the whole run when the omnibuses came out. And that period between Star Wars and Empire, you can tell nobody knows what Star Wars is. They all use that movie as a launch pad, and Marvel launched left and then Empire launched right. And they course correct.
Well, Carmine Infantino had the majority of that run, and he always drew the Millennium Falcon different every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time the show.
He drew the weirdest Chewbacca.
And you think they would have like had some kind of like photograph or some kind of book, even if it's just like a collection in like a binder of like reference materials from like the models or something.
Well, I think they
like
said Al Williamson.
That was from Empire, though.
Yeah, he bought, and that's a beautiful book. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when.
And he bought all the models and assembled them, so he had them in his studio, so when he had to turn the Millennium Falcon, he could get it right.
And that's how you'd have to do it. That's exactly what it should
be. It was that first movie, they had a bunch of stills, just like any other movie that's a one-off.
But you're right. Once Empire came out, the art changed, the everything about the look of the book changed, because Al Williamson, I'm telling you, Al Williamson, Carlos Garzón, most gorgeous adaptation you're ever going to see.
It's the best of all of those.
Well, it's Al Williamson. Yeah. I mean, this guy's like...
And then Ron Frenz took over the monthly, and it was a lot tighter, too, franchise was.
Remember, Walt Simonson had a run on the book, too. That is probably my favorite run. Walt Simonson and Tom Palmer.
Did Star Wars
doing
stuff?
Star Wars.
Wow, I've never seen that.
That's when you introduced... They introduced all these characters. They went back to Bespin.
Yep.
The Shira Bri character comes in, the Luke Skywalker pariah.
Yeah, and it's an interesting story where it's mostly Luke and Leia recruiting planets. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the stories of them going to a new planet and going, hey, if you want to ditch the Empire, we'll accept you into the Rebellion. It was almost like an aggressive form of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
It was like they were accepting them into the Federation. And there were a lot of planets like, oh, I don't know, there's stormtroopers coming now, they're going to kill us all. And then Luke would have to kill the stormtroopers.
But the artwork was gorgeous. I mean, I'm telling you, the Walt Simonson stuff on Star Wars is. I've been waiting to get that, just that omnibus.
That?
It's in there. I mean, there's a 3-volume set that covers the entire Marvel run.
Yeah, but
and I think it's is it volume 2?
There's probably a lot more in there than you'd want. A lot of those aren't great.
No, but it was fun to read the entire run from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm. They gave us hoojibs.
Yes,
remember the hoojibs?
Yeah, they were like weird telepathic
bunny
tribbles.
Basically, it was, the tribbles.
Yeah. But I guess overall, I was satisfied with the film. There were a lot of things I like. I liked that it was shot differently. I liked that it had a different look. It was like this soft, darker look.
Grim dark.
Gritty. I noticed the acting style was very different. It was a lot more subtle in a way that even the J.J. Abrams film. The J.J. Abrams film, I thought, had a more natural sense of humor, like especially like Poe Dameron, just that who talks first? You talk first, I talk first. Or the Daniel Craig Stormtrooper. I was like, oh, we're updating the humor. But there's still that heightened form of everything's articulated and everything's said perfectly. And the speech is very big. And this, I felt like it was way more relatable dialogue. And I liked the chances they took of like, hey, how far can we push it this way? It was almost when Marvel did Guardians of the Galaxy. All right, let's do a space movie. What's that going to look like?
I felt that it was, as far as like cinematography, I thought there were a lot of like homage shots. It seemed like it was filmed very much like A New Hope, I felt. Like there's stuff in the Death Star that looked very similar.
I thought the production design was an homage, but I didn't think the shooting style was.
Apparently, though, they said that they use, again, the whole bit, 77 style equipment lenses, blah, 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 all that whole bit.
The aesthetics.
So I think I'm getting, I think now it's time to move beyond that. Okay, guys, great. Now we know that.
Well, it's also filled with CG, so it's never going to be that.
No, but I think this very much seemed like a movie by Star Wars fans for Star Wars fans. You know what I mean? It was like, all right, we're going to have them go to like a thing where they have to take down a portal. Wouldn't it be awesome if they had AT-ATs there? Yeah, we're making a movie. Let's put AT-ATs in it. And let's fucking have Darth Vader cut a bunch of those rebel guys from like Star Wars 1. Do you know what I mean? It was like...
It's Battlefront.
Right. Yeah, basically was like a bunch of fans servicing themselves, making a movie about the stuff that they wanted to see. Let's have a big space battle with like an Admiral Akbar type guy in one of those swivel chairs where he looks down and through the glass window. It was like that.
You didn't know there was a window below him?
No, but it was in the first one or whenever he showed up.
No, he had the windows in front of him. He didn't have it below him.
No, I like all that stuff. I'm just saying this was a film.
Yeah,
fan fiction. That's exactly what this felt like. This felt like somebody making a big budget like fan fiction Star Wars movie. And I'm okay with that.
Hey, shout out to George Lucas for giving us Return of the Jedi, which was essentially the template for the last two Star Wars movies. I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
The Force Awakens is Return of the Jedi, battle in space, shield, thing you need to take it down on the ground, blah, blah, blah.
Three subplots running.
Yeah, same thing
third
with
act, yeah.
Same thing with Rogue One.
Yeah, so. Whereas the original Star Wars is those are broken up. And the second act is them running around fighting and getting into traps. And then the third act is a space battle. As we said, Empire, no space battle. A chase. There's two plots, but then they come together in the third act. Mm-hmm. And then Return of the Jedi is the one that layers and bounces, and you're right. Mm-hmm. And Phantom Menace did it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Phantom Menace had Anakin in the...
And they had to blow up that droid thing.
Yeah, they had to blow up the donut.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while the Darth Maul lightsaber fight is going on, while Padme's running around. You're right.
So
it's very much that conceit.
So I'm hoping that they start breaking away from that now.
Yeah, I think they really need to.
Yeah. I was very disappointed by the third act because I felt like I thought we were going to get a smaller film. And I'm not talking about budget.
Yeah.
Like, but I thought we were going to stay with those characters. And like when the fleet showed up, I was pretty disappointed. And there was a moment where I was like, well, wait a minute. How are these guys rebel spies that smuggled the plans out if the fleet is attacking the entire fleet and Darth Vader is there?
Did anyone think it was cool when they tried to, like, the fleet tried to fly away and that giant Star Destroyer came in and just, like, crashed?
Yes, I thought that was amazing.
I was like, finally, because they always warp in and they're fine.
Yeah.
You know, a bunch of ships warping to a new location and having the same positions in space, I'll give that to you. But how do you know you're not going to warp in, especially when they're like, we're going to warp in right on top of the bad guy fleet. It's like, how do you know you're not going to park your truck inside another guy's space truck?
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, but you're right. They took chances, but it was the kind of chances that fans think about. Like, this movie could have been made with Kenner toys.
Yeah, like very much.
It was very much made by a kid lying on his stomach with the figures out, like, oh, and this guy fights this guy. And, you know, the new characters were the Fisher-Price Adventure people.
Yeah, exactly.
They grabbed out of the bin. But none of it was done wrong. And they didn't make any decisions where it was like, where are we going now?
Nothing felt not like Star Wars in this movie.
Right,
everything felt authentic.
Nothing broke Star Wars, and I felt like some things really supported it. And I watched probably the first hour of A New Hope today, and I was like, that beginning really lines up. And you know what? I care a lot more when I see the Tantive IV coming over Tatooine and the Star Destroyer coming in. Like, my adrenaline is kicked up.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost like they took the opening scroll of Star Wars and went, okay, how can we make a blockbuster movie out of this first paragraph?
Yeah.
And they did that well. Whether or not we needed it or whether or not it ticked off all the boxes.
Yeah, but A New Hope still has more characters that we care about.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know, definitely. That's the thing. Why? When are they going to get to that? Well, The Force Awakens gave me characters I cared about, too, so that's why.
Yeah.
That's why right.
I think this might be the only Star Wars movie where there isn't more than one character to care about. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I spent all the prequels only liking Obi-Wan.
Well, he was the only one you could
yeah, but, like,
about.
Yoda yeah. was in the prequels. Yeah, Mace Windu was cool. No?
Yeah.
I mean, he was just Samuel Jackson in space.
Yeah.
He was no Nick Fury.
Yeah.
No, I guess that's true.
They were just showing. I just saw Revenge of the Sith on TNT.
Yeah.
And I just started watching it. It was like the bit near the end where the Jedi start getting purged and all that. And I'm going, oh my God, this movie's bad.
It's bad. Yeah, it's really bad.
I can't believe. I mean, once you strip away the emotion and the hype and the, oh my goodness, this is what I've been waiting to see and blah, 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 blah. And you actually just sit down and watch it
as
objectively.
A movie.
It's not executed well.
You're like, oh man.
And that's why I'm really glad George Lucas is gone because, you know, he didn't know what the fuck he was doing anymore.
The dialogue between Obi-Wan and Anakin. I remember the worst things about the prequels was that there was always a better movie out around the same time. Like, Phantom Menace came out a month after The Matrix. And you were like, all right, it's not The Matrix. And then Attack of the Clones came out 6 months after Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And then Revenge of the Sith, I was like, this is okay. And then Batman Begins comes out a month later.
Yeah.
Like, everybody ate Lucas's lunch. And when you go in, like, that dialogue is... The characters are so clunky.
I hate sand. It's coarse,
yeah.
And it gets everywhere.
To me, the Jedi are evil.
So I'll give Rogue One this. It actually had decent acting,
yeah.
Considering all those things. The last two Star Wars movies had pretty good acting.
I liked the script. I felt like there were definitely things that were shoehorned in. Like that movie, if you were just telling that story, that movie could have been an hour shorter and had half as many characters to tell that story. Like the thing that bothered me the most was everything in that third act was so complicated.
Yeah.
Of like to get the data out and to connect to the fleet's Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Was that there were seven things.
Well, that's like, if somebody was saying, why can't they just transmit this information out into like space and then anyone with like a radar.
Put it on the internet?
Yeah, put it on the internet. I'm like, well, I guess it's like 1970s version of space. It's like, this is a long time ago in a galaxy far away. It's like, why didn't the Death Star's size and mass destroy that planet just from being on the horizon. The
gravity.
And it's like Star Wars has fucked up physics and science.
It's a fairy tale.
But yeah, exactly.
I did like that they walked the line acknowledging, okay, we have Wi-Fi and we can transmit data. Because that's what I was wondering. I'm like, then why does Princess Leia have to put it in a robot? Like, why doesn't she just upload it? But I thought they did a good job of saying, they even made a point. She was like, these files are pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that made me laugh. I was just like, you got to have a broadband connection for this.
It's
just, you know, just the JPEGs alone.
Right.
I will say, the one thing that got me, and this is because I'm a total nerd, when they say the data tapes, they had to get the tapes, and then the thing that pops out is like a 8-track or something like that. You know, I'm like going, wow. But then what? Okay, I know what 8-track, how much data 8-track can hold, and it's not going to hold that much data.
Right. Yeah. But it's, you know, I thought it was an external hard drive. That could hold a lot.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
But, you know, it's like watching Next Generation now, and all the laptops are bigger than the laptops we have now.
Right.
And it's supposed to be 400 years from now.
Yeah.
But we're on an hour, it seems like we all like it with reservations. The next film we get is going to be Episode 8, which is going to be the big thing.
Finally.
This being a side movie, we usually talk about the Marvel movies, like how does this set up the next film? How does this take us in a new direction? But does it even do that? Or is it just this appendix?
It's like a test in do Star Wars movies without any new major characters or existing major characters pay off. Because that's what I was thinking. Is like, you know, people took their kids to see this movie, right? Little girls saw this movie and maybe were interested in that character, the female lead, and then she dies. So then there's no sequel we're ever going to see with that character. She's dead. And it's like, they're not going to do a prequel to a prequel. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, because she doesn't do anything before we see her as a kid.
Her whole life is in this movie. So I think in that sense, it's like, it's interesting that Disney went in with the idea to do that instead of thinking, let's just milk it for sequels.
Well, the last shot is Princess Leia, so you hand the baton over.
Right.
So the idea is, oh, you like strong female leads? Now watch the original trilogy on Blu-ray, which Disney's going to put out themselves, so Fox stops making that
right
money.
But I think to that, they're not – it just shows they're not worried about running out of material for Star Wars, is that they created entirely new characters and then fucking killed all of them. Because they're not like, well, we don't need sequels to these because we'll just do a Han Solo movie, and then we'll do a Chewbacca movie, and then a Boba Fett movie. They'll just keep doing – they have an infinite number of stories to tell.
And they've distracted us from the idea that we still don't know what Rey's last name is.
Well, nobody's going to bring up a girl who's not going to be born for 40 years in this movie.
Just saying, they've been very clever about
think she's a Solo. I think she's
a Skywalker.
I think she and Kylo Ren are brother and sister. There's too much of a connection.
Too much.
Well, she is a Skywalker if she's Princess Leia's daughter.
But they've been very clever, switching the timelines around. Marvel just finished the Force Awakens comic adaptation, you know.
A year later? Wow.
Yeah. So, and now they're going to start ramping up the Episode 8 stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there'll be prequel year, comics and more all prequel that stuff probably.
And we'll see what's – I mean, and again, when am I getting my freaking Luke Skywalker Jedi Master action figure?
I think there's a Hot Toys coming. That's the only one I know of, but I think they wanted to keep him such a secret.
It's been a while.
They didn't even sculpt him.
The cloak and the robot hand?
And the beard,
Skywalker? Yeah.
Yeah, but no, they had photos of him. They're production stills of him in the costume. Why didn't – I'm just like annoyed that there hasn't been like a Black Series.
Yeah, because he's just standing
there. Yeah, it is a little weird that they didn't do
that. My guess is there was Mark Hamill just uploaded a video of him shaving his beard off. So I think he has a lot to do in Episode 8.
Mm-hmm.
And whether
beardless, you think?
I think he finished Episode 8.
Yeah.
And either there's enough of a break between 8 and 9
where he can grow it back
and he can just do Joker voiceovers for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Or Episode 8 is all he get the way Han Solo only got Episode 7.
Yeah. Well,
he said he's done. But he also said that after
with 8 or with
with 8. But he also said the same thing with Episode 7.
He said the same thing about the Joker after Arkham City.
Yeah. He's a liar. So, you can't believe anything he says. He's a filthy liar.
All right. Well, if you want to argue with any of the filthy lies we've told today, you can go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/caffeinatedcomics. You can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter and argue with me. I'm getting more arguments, and I love all of them because I just want some kind of validation from other human beings. And I think that's fantastic. Elliot.
Troll him.
How can we follow you?
Always on Twitter and Instagram at Elliot Serrano. Two L's, two T's, two R's. Yes, I am now on the Snapchat, like all the kids, which is, I'm still figuring that one out.
And you Facebook Live this recording.
And I Facebook Live talking
before
this.
I follow you live frequently.
Yeah.
You're my most live Facebook friend.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Your whole family follows me, apparently.
Yeah, you're very popular with the Browns.
Browns are good people.
Cool. I like the Browns.
Yeah. And you have your own podcast, which I don't think we've ever plugged.
Oh, Geek Counter Geek on the Radio Misfits network. So Geek Counter Geek, where we'll also be doing a review of Rogue One, but I took a different angle. I mean, I just hammered the Star Tours aspect of Rogue One.
That's awesome.
Which is, I mean, really, they're going to have, you know, they're going to add a Rogue One scene to the Star Tours ride.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
So, because you know, like,
aren't they redewing all those parts to make, like, new, yeah.
I haven't been there since the early 90s.
I'm going in January.
And when you're back from your trip in January, how can people find you?
You can't really find me anymore. And apparently, maybe this is a little too personal, I'm notoriously hard to serve.
Serve?
Yeah, like lawsuit stuff. We'll get into that off the air. But also...
I thought you meant like as a waiter.
I know. I thought
I'm never at the table. I'm never around.
I won't put my order in. I can't be found.
I keep saying, give me a minute.
Yeah. You can, but you can't really find me at the stores regularly anymore, but you can try.
All right.
Challenge.
How do I fucking end that?
Paternity suits?
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!